Oh, there it is. The joint session of the 63rd Wyoming Legislature budget session will please come to order. Senator Bebout, Representatives Berger and Stufson will escort the First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Meade, their children, Mary and Pete, and His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Meade, to this joint session. The body shall stand at ease until the sound of the gavel. Are you ready? Is there no sound going back in the back? Well, we're doing a sound check. Is that better? Would you like me to read the script again? It was a great script.
I think you should do the gavel again, too.
Oh,
you want me to do the gavel?
Here, I'll do it all over again. We'll start from scratch. This is a sound check. The joint session of the 63rd Wyoming Legislature budget session will please come to order. Senator Bebout and Representative Berger and Stufson will execute the First Lady.
All right.
You know, that first one went a lot better. Let's try this again. Senator Bebout and Representatives Berger and Stufson will escort the First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Meade, their children, Mary, Pete, and His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, and that prior word might apply there, Matthew H. Meade, to this joint session. The body will rest at ease until the sound of the gavel.
That was nice. Good start.
Are you ready? Yeah, you got to sound the gavel.
The joint session will now come to order.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, it is my pleasure to announce the following guests. The Honorable Gregory Phillips, United States Court of Appeals Judge for the 10th Circuit, escorted by Senator Rothfuss and Representatives Throne and Walters. The Honorable Keith Couts, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Ross and Representatives Baldwin and Esquivel. The Honorable Kate Fox, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Kraft and Representatives Madden and Connolly. The Honorable Michael Davis, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Meyer and Representatives Paxton and Kinner. The Honorable William Hill, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Wasserberger and Representatives Crone and Harshman. The Honorable Jillian Balow, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, escorted by Senator Coe and Representatives Summers and Northrup. The Honorable Mark Gordon, State Treasurer, escorted by Senator Von Flatteren and Representatives Burkhart and Larson. the Honorable Cynthia Cloud, State Auditor, escorted by Senator Driscoll and Representatives Hunt and Byrd. The Honorable Ed Murray, Secretary of State, escorted by Senator Emmerich and Representatives Munoz and Kirkbride. The Honorable E. James Burke, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Landon and Representatives Greer and Pelkey. The First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Meade, and His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Meade, escorted by Senator Bebout and Representatives Berger and Stubson.
I would like to invite Father Cronkleton to please give us the invocation. I think, Father, you're going to realize that you're going to have to get close to that microphone.
Almighty and eternal God, we gather here today here in the Jonas Center in this temporary chamber. We come from the four corners of this great state of Wyoming at the beginning of the budget session of the 63rd Wyoming Legislature to hear the state of the state and the state of the judiciary. This looks to be a very challenging year because we face declining revenues in the midst of many needs. We appear to have some difficult decisions to make in the midst of a seemingly impossible situation. We therefore ask that you pour forth your divine assistance upon our governor, the Secretary of State, the auditor, the treasurer, the superintendent of public instruction, the members of the judiciary, the members of this House and Senate, and all their support staffs. We are told of the great wisdom of King Solomon, who prayed not for power, nor for wealth, nor for a long life, nor for that enrichment and power over his enemies. Instead, he prayed for wisdom, that wisdom to govern and act wisely. Grant our leaders a double portion of the wisdom given to Solomon. Give them prudence, insight, and creativity, particularly when they face hard decisions during this session. Help them to work together for the common good of the people of this great state of Wyoming, and let them have a special concern for the poor and the most disadvantaged in our land. We ask this in all things in your holy name. Amen.
I think everybody's still getting used to these microphone systems. And Carol, if you go back and listen to the script that I read twice, be sure to listen to the first one. The second one, your kids might find funny, but it was kind of embarrassing. Members of the 63rd Legislature, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I present His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Meade.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you. Good morning. Thank you. Please be seated. Thank you. Thank you for the warm welcome. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the 63rd Legislature, Secretary Murray, Auditor Cloud, Treasurer Gordon, Superintendent Balow, Chief Justice Burke, members of the judiciary, members of the military, veterans, fellow citizens, Carol, Mary, Pete. To my knowledge, these words have never been uttered in a state of the state. How about them Broncos? So here we are. This is my sixth state of the state address, and the first not delivered in the Capitol. We all are trying to adjust to this as we follow in the footsteps of our predecessors. It's sort of our way of calling out an audible, Omaha, Omaha. But in 1869, the first territorial legislative assembly met in a building on the corner of 17th and Cary. It was not until the 10th assembly in 1888 that the assembly met in the Capitol building. I'm pleased to be here today, and it looks like this room I would describe from my vantage point as cozy. It looks cozy out there. But we already have got off to a good start because historically the way it works is I wait in my office in the Capitol, and then you have members of the House and the Senate come down and escort me all the way up. Because of the length of this building and because of the time it would have taken me to get here, we met halfway. So I think that's a good way to start the session. Before continuing on, we remember today all the men and women who are serving overseas. Wyoming always keep them in our thoughts and our prayers. And let's also take a moment now of silence to remember Representative John Patton from Sheridan, a great person, a great public servant for Wyoming. I am pleased to have with us today Representative the Shoshone and Arapaho tribes. I recognize the challenges the tribes face, and it's always I always appreciate the opportunity to meet with them because the discussions are on water, on health care, on energy prices, and we look forward to continuing our good working relationship that both this legislative body has and my office has with the tribes. We have with us today our tribal liaisons, Leslie Shakespeare and Sergio Maldonado, are here. They're in the back. If you could raise your hand. We're glad to have you both with us. It's been one of the most amazing things for me in my role as governor to also have the title of Commander-in-Chief of our Guard. And I would just tell you, the work the men and women do in the Guard is absolutely amazing. When I travel overseas, as I did late last year, and get to meet with the commanders that are in charge of our Guard, it's always the same message. The Wyoming Guard is the best. And our Guard continues to be deployed overseas on the fight of war on terror, continues to assist with civil emergencies here at home, and to help our Western neighbors. This past holiday season, our Christmas season, we had 102 Guard members deployed overseas. Most were in Afghanistan, a few in Germany. Last spring, I activated the Guard to help with the weather-related flooding in Niobrara County and other Wyoming counties. And I saw firsthand the effects in Lusk. Homes destroyed, roads and bridges damaged, people evacuated, businesses disrupted. The Guard, Homeland Security, Department of Transportation, and other agencies were all available and did an excellent job helping. The Guard contributes much to the security of our state and our nation, and we remain deeply, deeply grateful. General Luke Briner, Wyoming's Adjutant General, is in the audience. General, please stand so we can show our appreciation to you and the Guard. Wyoming is a patriotic state, and I don't know if you noticed, but last year we were recognized as the number one state for military retirees, and I think that's something we all can be incredibly proud of. So we recognize our vets again today, and we cannot thank them enough for their military service. In 2015, we celebrated the 5th Wyoming Welcome Home Day, a special day created by statute in 2011, and a beautiful piece of legislation that has been absolutely amazing. In the last 5 years, I've gone to Welcome Home Days events all across the state of Wyoming. And it's a remarkable experience when you see those vets, when you see the World War II vets and the Korean vets, and oftentimes, particularly, but not limited to, the Vietnam vets. When you see them and you look them in the eye, and you say, thanks for your service, welcome home, the responses are amazing. Some simply nod, some shake your hand, some break down in tears and hug you. Because the fact of the matter is, historically, we've not done the job we need to do to thank our vets. And so today, again, we thank our vets. We say welcome home. We say thank you to our veterans from whatever time period. We recognize 16,000 Vietnam vets live in Wyoming. And this last summer, we had the 50th reunion from the start of the Vietnam War to remember our Vietnam vets in Casper. It was an amazing occasion. Last fall, the Consul General from the Korean Consulate in San Francisco came to Wyoming to present peace medals to the Korean vets in Lovell, Powell, Cody area. The Korean War, fought in the early 1950s between World War II and the Vietnam War, is sometimes called the Forgotten War. An estimated 3,475 Korean vets live in Wyoming. These vets and their families have not forgotten that war, and Wyoming will never forget it either. We thank our vets, and we never want to miss an opportunity to thank them for their amazing service. On the state of the state, I'm pleased to report again, the state of the state remains strong. And I'm going to cover the reasons why I believe it is strong. But I'll include in there, as I have in the past, having a citizen legislature. It's an amazing thing, and I hope the state of Wyoming recognizes the sacrifice you all make in leaving your businesses and your families, the travel that you do not only during the session, but sometimes what's not recognized is you're not just sitting home in between sessions. You do an incredible amount of work, and I, for one, really appreciate it, and I look forward to us continuing that work. Throughout my administration, now in the second year of the second term, the focus has been on how we can strengthen our state. I've opposed federal actions that harm our state, its industries, and its economy. Through the good work of the Attorney General's Office, Wyoming has taken the EPA to task in court over such overreaching actions as the MAC rule, the Regional Haze Plan, the Waters of the U.S., and the Clean Power Plan. I will continue to fight for coal. Wyoming gains so much from coal and our mineral industries in general. And frankly, a lot of thank yous are owed to our miners, drillers, and all in the mineral industry that provides benefits to every single citizen in this state. So let's take a moment to show our gratitude and make known to Washington, D.C., Wyoming proudly is and will remain the energy producer for the rest of the country. It's a wonderful thing. We have aggressively protected Second Amendment rights in lawsuits and against federal executive proposals. For example, in Drake versus Philco was a case from the Third Circuit that upheld New Jersey's restrictive handgun permit law. Wyoming wrote the amicus brief urging the U.S. Supreme Court to hear the case and prevent the Third Circuit's opinion from standing. Wyoming's joined gun cases in Montana and Colorado federal courts and in the Ninth and Second Circuits and asked the U.S. Senate to pass the National Right to Carry Reciprocity Act. On January 5th this year, I wrote to President Obama questioning executive actions regarding gun control that were bypassing Congress. I said the right to bear arms is a fundamental constitutional right, and any action that arguably affects the right must include the Congress as elected representatives of the people of the United States. Executive action is no way to go about it. Wyoming continues to be strong on the Second Amendment, and we see that as something worth doing in and of itself, but it has collateral benefits as well. We see now that we have begun the process of building a niche industry in Wyoming with regard to gun manufacturing and gun companies. Magpul, Hi-Viz, Thunder Beast Arms, Wyoming Arms, Freedom Arms, Gunworks, and Best of the West are example of gun industry companies choosing Wyoming. We will continue to be proactive, but lawsuits are necessary as well. They're reactive in nature, and I think we've reacted well. On the proactive side, we've developed both energy and water strategies for the state. The second edition of the energy strategy will be released shortly. The sage-grouse implementation team, led by Bob Budd, worked hard on sage-grouse conservation. In the fall of 2015, the Fish and Wildlife Service decided not to list the bird. I thank Bob, I thank that team, I thank the leadership and vision of Governor Friedenthal. That was a big win for Wyoming not to have that bird listed. I continue to work with federal agencies on numerous natural resource issues. My initiative as chairman of the Western Governors Association is to improve the Endangered Species Act. It needs help, and it can and will be improved. We are working closely with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the states of Idaho and Montana on a plan to delist grizzlies this year. Wolves did well under state management, exceeding recovery goals. They need to come off the list, and we continue to work for that day. Because we are proactive, Wyoming leads in energy, we lead in the stewardship of natural resources and wildlife. I've worked to streamline state government, asking agencies to reduce their rules by 30%, and they've done a great job, some reducing even more. Contrasting with the president's use of executive orders, my first executive order was to strike 197 unnecessary and outdated executive orders, and I have been very judicious in the use of executive orders since that time. I've worked to consolidate agencies, centralize tech services, and keep the state workforce ready, slightly lower in number now than when I took office. The workforce is slightly lower now than when I took office. These efforts have made government better, not bigger. I've been proactive with the budget, looking for economic development, diversification, and growth opportunities while remaining fiscally conservative. In 2013, I recommended a reduction to the standard budget of over $60 million, a cut of over 6%. In 2014, I didn't even ask for all the money to be appropriate. I left $200 million on the table for you all, the legislature. Now, in fairness and hindsight, I probably would change that, but that's what I did. In 2013, 2014, and 2015, the last 3 years, this body's appropriated more money than I requested, but still took a conservative, measured approach balancing our needs with our revenue. This fiscally conservative approach of the executive and legislative branches served us well, including in the area of growing our savings. During my time in office, the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, established in 1974, has grown over 60% and now has a market value of $7 billion. The LSRA Rainy Day Fund, started in 2005, has grown, nearly doubling. It has a balance of about $1.8 billion. We can proudly say, compared to 2010, through our collective work, we have fewer executive orders. We have fewer rules. We have more efficient and more effective government. We have hundreds of millions more in savings, and we have fewer employees than we did in 2010. In contrast, look at the 5-6 biennium and the budget in place when I took office. The executive branch standard budget increased by over $1 billion, about 85% before I came in that time period. Between the time I took office and today, the standard budget, despite new legislative programs, pay raises, legislative language requiring me to ask for more money for some programs, mandatory rebasing, and health insurance increases, our budget has remained essentially flat. In fact, the 2015-16 standard budget is less than the standard budget was in 2009-2010. Savings have grown, and even with conservative budgeting, economic catalysts have been provided, used, and created great results. According to the Department of Commerce, Wyoming grew exports by double digits in 2014, setting a new record for exports. And we were one of the five states with the fastest growing export growth in the last five-year period. Wyoming's international trade increased 79% from 2010 to 2014. Thanks to the Wyoming Unified Network, we were the first state in the country to have Internet Protocol Version 6, called IPv6, network statewide, the latest and most updated communications protocol. We've not only increased our technology sector, but also our manufacturing. Payroll in the technology sector rose 25% from 2010 to 2014. Manufacturing jobs increased from 8,900 in December 2010 to 9,900 in December 2014, a gain of 11%. Because Wyoming has been proactive, because of the progress we've made, we see our state getting much-deserved national recognition. Wyoming received a top five award of excellence for data center recruiting from Expansion Solutions magazine in 2014, and Wyoming has been a top-tier state for data center recruitment for the past several years. In November 2015, Wyoming is ranked a top leader in K-12 broadband connectivity by Education Superhighway in its first nationwide survey. Wyoming school districts, the districts, are meeting the broadband goal of 100 kilobits per second per student. We are only one of two states in the country that have reached that goal. In December 2015, for the second year running, Wyoming was ranked the second best run state by 24/7 Wall Street. In January 2016, Wyoming moved from 16th to 6th on a listing of state strength by Political Magazine, the biggest move up of any state. In January 2016, Education Week issued its 20th report card. Wyoming education system was rated best among Western states and 8th best in the country. The Pew Institute has recognized our rainy day planning, and they recognize that Wyoming has the largest rainy day fund in the country in proportion to our overall budget. Wyoming's rainy day fund is third largest in terms of dollars. We're moving forward. Bighorn High School was chosen as one of the top 500 high schools in the country by Newsweek. Of the 24,000 public secondary schools in the U.S., to be recognized as in the top 500 is a tremendous achievement. Proudly, the University of Wyoming, our wonderful community colleges, continue to get better and better. While it's currently challenged, we have kept our AAA credit rating from Standard & Poor's since 2011. Other recognitions: we were rated the most business-friendly tax climate in 2014, 2015, and in 2016. Rated number two for new business startup in 2015. We were rated in 2015 by MoneyRates as the third best state in the country to make a living. UW is ranked number nine for best value college. There's other accolades. In January, Sunset Magazine recognized Lander runner-up for the best small western town and Laramie runner-up for best medium-sized western town. True West Magazine and the readers signaled out Cody and Buffalo last year as best places for Old West living. Our state is strong because of what we've been doing proactively. Hunkering down, doing nothing, that would not have gotten us where we are, nor will it keep us where we need to be. And I add, Wyoming citizens play a huge role in this. Wyoming is home to innovators, trailblazers, go-getters in every profession, in every walk of life. Our citizens provide the spark, the energy, the talent, and determination to propel our state forward. And today I'd like to recognize a few. Jerry Palin, who I think most of you know of, is the creator of the cartoon series Stampede. This nationally syndicated series ran for 43 years. It appeared in many places, including the Wyoming Stock Growers Newsletter, Pine Bluff, Bluffs Post, and Wyoming Livestock Roundup. With his work, he reminds us we are a proud ag state. Jerry is an accomplished painter and sculptor. His bronzes are at the National Cowboy Hall of Fame, our state capitol, UW, and elsewhere. And I understand every president since Carter has come to Jerry for artwork. Now, Jerry semi-retired from cartooning at the end of last year. But for over 40 years, Wyoming has enjoyed the beloved Flo and Elmo. In Wyoming, we value not just mineral wealth and natural beauty. We value experience, talent, originality. We support the arts because of the exceptionally talented artists in our state and the benefits we receive from them. Jerry, thanks for your contributions over the years. We can recognize you, ag, and the arts in Wyoming. Please stand. Mr. Palin. Thank you, Jerry. We know a state cannot have the 8th best education system in the country without the great legislative work you all have done for many years. And we recognize we can't have that ranking without great teachers. As I do every year in my State of the State, I recognize our teachers. I do this because all of us have had the experience of having those wonderful teachers in different points of our life that not only teach us math and science and English, but they teach us how to tie our tie. They teach us acts of kindness. They make a difference in our lives, and in turn, we have a responsibility to make a difference in others' lives. Teachers, education is foundational to the success of our state. So this year, I want to recognize Amy. Amy Pearson is Wyoming's 2006 Teacher of the Year. She's a fourth grade teacher at Cloud Peak Elementary in Buffalo. She's a national board-certified teacher. She seeks out leadership roles and mentors others. She sees the best and brings out the best in kids. And I'm pleased to recognize her and all our outstanding teachers today. Amy, please stand so we can give you a hand. I want to recognize Dick McGinnity. He stepped up in 2013 when the previous president resigned. He joined the faculty in 2007 as the Bill Daniels Chair of Business Ethics. As president, he has had a good and steadying influence at the university. We thank Dick for serving in this capacity, probably longer than he intended. New President Lori Nichols will start in May. Princeton and Harvard educated, Dick has a home in Crowheart and likes nothing better than being on a horse in the wilderness, which would explain the times I couldn't get hold of him. His presence reminds us what UW means to us. It's a great institution for higher education, advanced research, innovation, athletics, and more. Our state benefits so much from UW, and Dick, under your leadership, we've benefited even more. Congratulations. Thank you, sir. I'll tell you, I'm really proud of is the legislature and the state's recognition of how important rodeo is to our state. It's not just important because we love the entertainment. It's not just important because it allows cowgirls and cowboys to compete, brings in tourism dollars. It's important because we never want to lose that connection. We are the cowboy state, and we appreciate what the men and women who participate in rodeo mean. It's not just whether they win or lose, but what we like is they fall off that horse, or they have a bad day, or they face tough times, sometimes like the state does. They don't complain. They stand up, put their shoulders back, get back on, and ride again. That's why we celebrate rodeo. And today I want to recognize Cassidy Cruz. She's 20 years old. And I went down to the Las Vegas National Finals this year. First night I was there, it was her first time in the National Finals, and her first run, guess who won the whole deal? Cassidy Cruz from Wyoming. She finished third in the average and fifth in the final 2015 world standings. We couldn't be happier for her, not only because she represents rodeo and young people, but the character of Team Wyoming, which you all support through tourism, represents each and every one of us in a remarkable way. Cassidy, you remind us of the importance of supporting tourism, which supports Team Wyoming because of all the wonderful things you represent. Cassidy, come up here and let us get a look at you. Dr. Joe McGinley is a diagnostic radiologist in Casper. He's a doctor and mechanical engineer, and he submitted to me his bio. And this speech is long, but had I included that, we would run out of session time. It's amazing what he's accomplished. He's the founder of McGinley Orthopedic Innovations, which designs, manufactures, and brings precision medical devices to the market. One device, the IntelliSense drill, helps improve orthopedic surgery methods. The FDA-approved drill is used by some of the best hospitals here in Wyoming and across the country. Last August, SLIB awarded $1.35 million business-committed grant through the WBC to upgrade a facility in Glen Rock for this medical device maker. Manufacturing is currently going on. The town of Glen Rock put in $150,000. This is the type of business that helps diversify our economy. This is an example of economic dollars partnering to help our great entrepreneurs. Joe enjoys the things that draw so many people in Wyoming, the great outdoor recreation. He climbs, he does distance swimming, and stays in shape for events like the Cowboy Tough Adventure Race. Here's a smart doctor, and he's competed in every one of the Cowboy Tough Adventure Races. So he's not smart in every way, but he is tough. He's cowboy tough, he's cowboy smart, and he's diversifying our economy. Joe, come on up so we can get a look at you. We have so much going on. We have supercomputing at NCAR, the Integrated Test Center, the Unified Network, expanding data centers, 99 terrific municipalities, and more. This state of the state is indeed strong. Our strengths, people, communities, the leadership in this room and around the state not only carry us through the best of times, they carry us through difficult times and keep us competitive now and in the future. For me, even with revenue down, I look around Wyoming and I am heartened. I'm excited about what lies ahead. And to move ahead, we must provide a budget that not only recognizes the challenges of today, the challenges of tomorrow, but the opportunities today and the opportunities tomorrow. My budget proposal does that. While cautious, it helps us continue to be proactive. It does not overspend, yet it provides for economic growth, economic diversity. It represents hard choices. It sets priorities for the next, not only for the next 2 years, but for the long term. My budget, by borrowing from and repaying the rainy day, provides a method to trim our sails and still continue our great momentum. On the reduction side, before JC got to town, I had a hiring freeze in place, which saved a great deal of money. I cut $159 million from the current fiscal year budget, and I reduced agency budgets going forward by an additional $18.7 million. Reducing our budget is a reality we face. Some tough times are a reality we face. But it is also a reality that we need to continue to build and diversify Wyoming and tend to the health and welfare of all our citizens. In terms of building our state, I recognize we have different points of view. For example, despite the fact that the legislature cut my highway funding request last session, I requested funding for highways again this year. Despite the fact the legislature cut my local government supplemental funding request last year by 68%, I have requested a total of $123 million for local governments. I have supported and will continue to support local government. I ask you to join me in that support because one of the best umbrellas for this state when raining is to support local government. If you see fit to ask for more than I have, I'll support it. To keep building and diversifying our economy, I've also asked for contingent borrowing authority from the LSRA for a large project economic development account. This would be drawn upon when major economic development opportunities come up that should not be passed up. When the next Magpul or Microsoft is ready to relocate, Wyoming needs to be ready. Economic development must remain a priority. Local government, tourism, ag, highways, the energy industry, economic development, these are the things we must continue to support. These are the things that get some of those accolades to Wyoming that I read. To do otherwise would be short-sighted, cause us to lose momentum that we have built. The fact is we have the ability to avoid the days when we're losing jobs, industry, people, particularly young people. Rainy day funds give us this ability. We have the largest rainy day fund, relative rainy day fund in the country, which brings up the question, what's it for? I asked during my last State of the State that the legislature provide a framework for the use of the rainy day fund. I felt it was owed to the people of Wyoming to let them know, what is the rainy day fund for? When is it raining? What will be the triggers and the parameters for drawing from it? Questions that are still left unanswered today. It was important we provide guidance on rainy day dollars so our towns and counties could have some predictability and plan their budgets so they can pursue their priorities. Without a legislative guidelines on rainy day fund spending, I took the initiative on how I believed we should navigate the rainy days we find ourselves in and how the LSRA, the fund, could be used. You see that in my budget, the use of and paying back of the rainy day fund. Prudent use of the fund allows us to weather a storm, even if it comes in long term. Before going further in my recommendations, I do want to point this out. Every one of us, including members of the JAC, is going to have disagreements with the way JAC went. But we all must respect the tough choices that they've had to make. I've been here when they've been in those meetings. They don't keep bankers out. I'm sorry, with respect to bankers, that's just something that's said. I'm not a banker, but that was my outside voice. Okay, moving on. You see them, you know, you drive by and the lights are still on and they're in there still working. And they have a very tough job. And so while I, you, and they even with each other may have disagreements, we have to respect the tough job they do. But I do have disagreements where they left off in January. In my budget, I supported rainy day funding for Community College CapCon, the UW Science Initiative, which I think could be one of the greatest things that UW has ever done, and other great projects. And as this legislative body requires that I do, which is another point I would make, is everywhere it says the governor shall put something in the budget, you all have to take a look at that. But I added the 37.5 to the capital construction account. These projects, each one of them, I believe when I put my budget forth, have value in and of themselves. They have merit. They are good projects. And individually they're good, and collectively they benefit and support our wonderful construction industry. But my support of these CapCon projects is in the context of all my budget recommendations. When significant changes are made that alter my budget, the context changes. As we construct the budget, we must ask ourselves, what are the priorities? In asking that question, we must remember this. The legislature and the executive branch may appropriately distinguish between different revenue streams, savings, and long-term use of money, and we may distinguish between one-time and ongoing expenditures. In fact, we do that. And we know why we do that. But let us never forget, however we define it, all these dollars belong to the people of Wyoming. And the citizens will not judge our actions based upon our definitions, but how we spend their money or cut their services. If you're losing the sewer system in your town, or you're losing a senior system in your town, and you get the call, are you going to say, well, that's because it's a different type of money? That's hard for the public to accept. So where are we? The judicial branch has been cut. Some executive agencies have been cut into the double digits. My recommendations for highway, local government, tourism, ag, early childhood development, education, senior centers, literacy have been reduced. The JAC has yet to address capital construction. So what are our priorities? Do we fund a new state office building in Casper and not fully fund early childhood development? Do we spend $152 million-plus on capital constructions, buildings, and not take care of local government and tourism? Yes, we must tighten our belts. There's no question about it. Five of the last six Craig reports for this biennium have reduced general fund budget reserve accounts projections. It's the first time that has happened since the Craig was created. And we know, as Senator Bebout rightfully always points out, the private sector is hurting too, and they're struggling to get by. Our state revenue picture, in fact, may get worse. We may come to the supplemental session, and we may have to cut more, as we have done in the past. We will not act imprudently, like the federal government, and kick the can down the road. We are in for a tough budget session. There will be disagreements, but in the end, in Wyoming, it's not in us to overspend. It's not who we are or how we operate. Under my budget proposal, we will stay true to our conservative roots. That's a priority. We must stay true to our roots in other areas. We must not prioritize projects over people. Economic diversification remains a priority. We need STEM opportunities for our kids, a water strategy, forest strategy, a sound energy strategy, economic development monies to help build and diversify and continue the momentum we have built. We can work to have both economic development and capital construction. But in my view, we cannot build buildings without assurances they'll help improve our state, provide better services to our citizens, and not come at the expense of our seniors, our children, or others. These are the people who are hurting during the downturn who will most benefit from such things as senior centers, workforce services, and great education. Construction projects must meet these needs. If not, they shouldn't be built. I do believe this. For example, several years ago when the legislature put money in the budget for a new governor's mansion, I vetoed it. Nor did I agree when the legislature appropriated money for a new large office building. The fact is, though, the good news is we have the ability to address health care, education, local government, ag, energy, and still have important capital construction projects if we make the right choices. I believe my budget provides a path to do that. I'm confident the people we are here to serve will accept tough reductions. I'm confident of that. But they will be less accepting about the loss of a senior program or a sewer system in their town while we continue to build up the largest relative rainy day fund in the country as if it's not raining. Last year in the supplemental budget, I requested $25 million for local government. Legislature provided $8 million. Our towns and counties can't continue to get high marks if they don't have good roads, sewer, and other infrastructure. From recent SLIB or WBC meetings, and I got my SLIB partners here, we see the results of local government struggles and the negative effect of last year's cut on our towns and counties. In contrast, I see that when that money is available for local government and economic development, we can continue to diversify our economy. My budget recommendations reflect my actions to make cuts twice after the October Craig and again after the January Craig. Because of the hiring freeze, everybody is already doing more with less, and there does come a tipping point. My budget recommendations do not require more cuts. I ask that we work for a responsible, sustainable budget that makes clear our priorities. And I ask you to send me a complete budget that leaves matters settled and nothing left undone. If you believe more cuts are needed, while I may disagree, make those cuts before you leave town. Cuts should be considered by all the legislators in the full light of a legislative session. I disagree during this critical time with the notion of leaving cuts to be sorted out later. It is sort of the reverse of spending by tranches. It doesn't always come out the way you think. One clap. All right. That was good. Let us finish our work now. If you feel more cuts are needed, it is now, with full public participation, these cuts should be made, not after the session. AML funds. We have got to thank our congressional delegation for getting AML funds restored. Senator Enzi, Barrasso, Lummis, did yeoman's work to bring AML funds back to Wyoming where they came from and where they belong. This money helps especially in a time of constrained revenue. The state will receive more than $500 million over the next decade. It goes without saying we will thoughtfully allocate these funds. We're fortunate to have the influx of these funds. They couldn't come at a better time, and I gave my recommendation in the January letter to JC on how I see the use of those funds. Medicaid expansion. As we move forward, even with the available AML dollars, tough choices are going to be required by all of us. And I wonder, are we willing to cut more than $33 million from literacy, tourism, local government, senior centers, and early childhood development just so we don't have to expand Medicaid? 5 years ago, I stood before this body and I told you I'd fight against the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. I kept that promise. Wyoming was a leader in the nation and standing against this ill-advised law. We fought, took it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and despite our best efforts, the ACA was upheld as the law of the land. We lost the legal battle, and to date we've lost the political battle. I've urged you to move forward with a solution. In a previous State of the State, I said, my plan or yours, or something better. We have fought the fight against the ACA. We've done our best to find the fit for Wyoming. We're out of timeouts, and we need to address Medicaid expansion this session. Since then, no progress has been made. We've tried to find a Wyoming solution to our health care, and we have not. The legislature appropriated $3.25 million for Healthy Frontiers. It didn't work out. The SHARE plan and other plans have been considered and rejected. No solutions have been found. And so, because we haven't got the job done, now you see organizations coming out in support of Medicaid expansion. Wyoming AARP, Wyoming Association of Churches, Wyoming Business Alliance, Wyoming Hospital Association, Wyoming League of Women Voters, Wyoming Medical Society, Wyoming Nurses Association, Wyoming Education Association, Wyoming Lodging and Restaurant Association, Wyoming State Chambers of Commerce, AFL-CIO, and Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Wyoming, and others. It's a long list of supporters, and it's getting larger. By not expanding Medicaid, our hospitals are left with more than $114 million a year in uncompensated care costs. That's why these organizations support expansion. Hospitals cannot cost shift from patients who can pay to those who cannot cover the debt. If we do not act, we may lose hospitals. That's why these organizations support expansion. Many of our hospitals are operating on the thinnest of margins. They're cutting back services, and all our citizens lose when that happens. Some smaller hospitals must send patients to larger hospitals, which then try to absorb even more losses. That's why these organizations support expansion. Federal taxpayer dollars from Wyoming are going to other states for their health care. For fiscal conservatives among us, I'd point out Wyoming loses $310,000 every day we decide not to expand Medicaid, and we've lost more than $220 million since the start of 2014. In contrast, if Medicaid is expanded, $268 million of Wyoming federal tax dollars will come back to Wyoming over a two-year period. That's why these organizations support expansion. If Medicaid is expanded, we save $33 million in the Wyoming Department of Health budget at a time when we face revenue shortfalls. More than 20,000 Wyoming residents not eligible for Medicaid and unable to afford insurance remain uninsured. These are not somebody. They are our neighbors. They are us. That's why these organizations support expansion. If we expand Medicaid, 90% plus will be paid by the federal dollars. If we do not expand Medicaid, 100% of the bad debt and charity care will be paid by Wyoming taxpayers. The choice is whether to accept 90% plus from the federal government or continue to pay 100% ourselves, sending that 90% to other states for their health care. If the federal government backs out on promises, are we worse off than we are now? Certainly this body has recourse. You can set as a condition, the feds fail to live up to the deal, we're out. Now, I hear from those who just philosophically don't want to spend federal money to support expansion. and they don't want to have any plans based upon federal money. Well, I point out about half the state agencies, not including our boards and commissions, receive federal money, a lot of federal money. For example, this last biennium, in just 1 year, Department of Health received over $408 million. The Department of Family Services received over $57 million of federal money. Department of Transportation and federal money received more than $313 million. Department of Education received more than $115 million. Should we not make long-term plans with those agencies just because they receive federal money? Should we ignore AML dollars just because they've proven to be uncertain? I think the answer to that is we should make long-term plans. We do, and we have been. Wyoming citizens and businesses already pay for the ACA. Wyoming's just sending the money to other states. I cannot discover a way. We have not discovered a way to address failing hospitals, uncompensated care, and more than 20,000 uninsured without double-dipping on the Wyoming taxpayers. Few of us in Wyoming like the ACA. I'm among the many who do not like it, and that's why I challenged it, had it challenged in court. So I understand that, and it is more than fair not to like my suggestion. But it's not fair to Wyoming to leave these problems unaddressed. To suggest the solution is going to be a new administration in D.C. that will fix it all. From where I sit, it could get worse, depending upon who the president is. I hope for changes, such as education or work requirement. We want significant changes. Our dedicated federal delegation has been fighting this fight in a good fight and will rightfully continue to push for changes. In the meantime, which hospitals will go under? How many individuals will suffer from lack of care or use emergency centers for primary care? How many services will be cut to avoid Medicaid expansion? Which business owners will lose a business because of health issues and no insurance? There's an urgency to this issue. Because it has such a large budget impact, I've recommended Department of Health's budget with optional Medicaid expansion and reduced standard budget of $9.7 million, a reduced standard budget in the Department of Health. This means the Department of Health exception request would not have to be funded with general fund dollars. It means $268 million in added federal funds flow into Wyoming. It means these millions of dollars will be spent on hospitals, doctors, nursing homes, mental health centers, and other providers and communities all around the state. And the economic boost would stabilize services and infuse federal tax dollars paid by Wyoming citizens back into our cities and towns. In January, the JC voted 7-5 against Medicaid expansion. It's now time for this body to speak. Wyoming is listening. Our talking points don't provide health care. Our actions can. We fought the battle against the ACA. We lost. You don't like my plan? What is the legislature's solution to this issue? School funding. As for school operations and school cap count, there are hard choices to make. We see disagreement even now with what I proposed on the ECA and where the JC is now. This is the most serious long-term budget problem we have. It is long-term because of President Obama's administration, what they've done to diminish rather than improve COLE. The legislature has been a tremendous supporter of education, and we won't want to lose that momentum. While we should begin that process today, I am not, as some have suggested, that they are in agreement that this is the time to raise taxes. I just don't think that is where we are today, because certainly we are at a point where we're still spending on things that we would not be spending on if we're at the point of considering more taxes. They are not easy answers. We understand the districts remain supportive of the funding model, but the robust funding model provided by COLE and other sources is not currently available. I'll continue to push for COLE. You'll continue to push for COLE and markets for COLE. But now COLE is hurting, and so too is funding for education. The legislature has done incredible work on this very difficult issue. It is not for a lack of effort. It is because the answers are so very hard. So over the next year, we need private businesses, schools, legislators, executive branch, and others to address the school funding issue. Let's look before we leap. I see already the legislature is headed in that right direction. I see currently you've got over 100 proposed bills to consider. But make no mistake, all eyes are on the budget on us. During plus budget times, our jobs are easier. But that is the time that defines us. Budgeting should have long-range perspective. It should not simply be an exercise in balancing revenue and expenditures 1 year at a time. Decisions should be based on a multi-year planning horizon because budgeting is about being consistent with the goals and plans of the state. What we do now, we either build or stagnate Wyoming. Let us step up with courage, build Wyoming, take care of our citizens, and provide a conservative yet positive path forward. It's a heavy lift that you all are going to undertake. But as I started, it is this legislature, a citizens' legislature, that is the best equipped to address these problems. The history of this legislature, not just recent history, but long-term history, is doing just that. It is a common sense, bold, courageous approach that you all do in your jobs that will get us to where we need to be. And so, while we face these challenges, as I stand before you today, where we agree or disagree, I feel so blessed that we live in this wonderful state, a state where we see fences being put around our airports, not to keep bad guys out, but our wonderful wildlife out. Do we live in a great state or what? We really do. And I would say also that I feel blessed to get to see all of you work, how seriously you take your jobs. And my message for all of you, you've got a hard job this year, but you are well equipped to do a great job. We are blessed. May God continue to bless our state, our citizens, the United States of America, and may we all do our best in the difficult work ahead. Thank you very much.
Governor Mead, on behalf of the members of the legislature, we all thank you for attending the joint session with us, and thank you for the family for coming with us. We're glad to see you. Members of the 63rd Legislature, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I now present the Honorable E. James Burke, Chief Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court. Chief Justice.
Thank you very much for that welcome. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, Governor, Mrs. Mead, members of the 63rd Wyoming Legislature, elected officials, members of the judiciary, guests and citizens of the state of Wyoming, it is an honor to speak to you on behalf of the men and women who serve in the judicial branch of our state's government. Thank you, President Nicholas, Speaker Brown, for the opportunity to do so. The governor is a tough act to follow and even stole my first line, which was, how about them Broncos? Okay. I was tempted to show you my Von Miller jersey, which I'm wearing underneath my robe, but I will. Before I begin, I would like to compliment you all, actually, on these temporary facilities. The governor mentioned that, from his viewpoint, they were cozy, I believe was the word that he used. But I'm sure that Justice Hill will remember when we moved out of the Supreme Court, cozy would not have done justice to what our courtroom was like in those days. So you were all to be commended. for the quality of these facilities. As I was preparing for this presentation, I kept flashing on scenes from the Weather Channel. I started to identify with residents of coastal communities, glued to their sets, tracking the latest hurricane, who were appalled to learn that what started as a seemingly harmless tropical storm had now reached Category 1 status, was gaining strength, and heading their way. I'm sure they hoped that wind currents and pressure systems would move the storm out to sea, or at a minimum that it would not make landfall where they lived. I don't know where this current financial storm that our state is facing is going to land, but I'm pretty sure that we're all going to get wet. However, I'm confident that we're also going to weather it, and you are all going to help us get through it. There have been some rays of sunshine since we last visited. Justice Kautz was selected to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court resulting from Justice Kite's retirement. Justice Kautz comes to our court after a distinguished career spanning 22 years as a district judge in the 8th Judicial District. Our courtroom was packed during his swearing in, and the overflow crowd prompted Justice Hill to dub him the Garth Brooks of robing ceremonies. The appointment of Justice Kautz created another vacancy, and Patrick Quirrell was appointed as a district judge to replace Justice Kautz. Judge Quirrell is a well-respected and experienced attorney. He is the past president of the Wyoming State Bar and was in the midst of his fifth term as Goshen County Attorney at the time of his appointment. Both bring a wealth of experience and talent to the Wyoming judiciary, and we look forward to working with them. Their selection is another testament to our merit selection process. I'm sure the governor's decision was difficult because, once again, he was presented with three highly qualified candidates for each position. I will not go into further detail of that process because I spoke about it at length last year, but it does bring to mind Representative John Patton, who passed away since then. I can still picture him in the audience during last year's address. He had such a great smile, and it was in evidence while I was extolling our state's judicial selection process. He made it a point to find me afterwards, and I enjoyed listening to him as he recalled the legislative effort leading to creation of our merit selection process. He was proud of that effort and his role in it. Representative Patton was a wonderful person, and he will be missed. In the past year, we've made significant progress on the court facilities front. The new circuit courthouse in Riverton was completed, and extensive improvements to the courthouse in Pinedale were accomplished. We've been advised that the project for the new circuit courthouse in Sweetwater County was recently put out to bid, and the groundbreaking for that project will occur later this spring. As you will recall, in last year's session, funding for security improvements in 9 courthouses was approved. There is a matching funds requirement, and the counties must seek the funding from the State Loan and Investment Board. 6 counties submitted their applications, and all were approved. We expect that the remaining counties will submit their funding applications in the near future. We're not requesting additional funding for courthouse security in this year's budget. We have, however, filed another grant application to fund courthouse security assessments in other counties, and we will keep you informed of the results. We continued with our efforts to install audio and visual technology in courtrooms throughout the state. During this biennium, we installed the technology in several courtrooms. Those efforts were funded by a $300,000 exception approved during the last budget session. We're seeking a similar exception in this budget session. As always, we will attempt to leverage the fund by seeking contributions from the counties. We should note that the technology upgrades in Sublette County Courthouse were funded by the county, and we salute the county leadership that made those improvements possible, and I'd like to expand a little on their efforts. In late August of last year, an open house was held to showcase the improvements. The event was summarized by Don Ballou in an article for Pinedale Online. The article was forwarded to me by Judge Tyler with justifiable pride in his courthouse and his community. The article captures the essence of what was done and what we are trying to accomplish in courtrooms throughout the state. The article reads as follows. On Thursday, August 27th, the district courtroom in the Sublette County Courthouse in Pinedale held an open house to showcase technology upgrades that were recently made to the courtroom. The court installed additional monitors in the jury box and at the defendant and prosecuting attorney's tables to allow everyone to see the visuals being presented. The sound system has been upgraded with a variety of hearing assist devices. The video system has been made more versatile inside the courtroom and also connects to the state video conferencing system, which allows real-time visual connection to courtrooms and live proceedings and other courtrooms in counties across the state. The courtroom upgrades will be used for numerous court proceedings, including jury trials, and help ensure greater confidence in proceedings and verdicts in the court. The article mentions only the district court, but similar improvements were made in the circuit courtrooms. Both Judge Tyler and Judge Hawes have put the technology to good use, helping out in other courts. They are not alone. Where the technology is in place, our judges use it. Our judges can assist in other jurisdictions on a more frequent and economical basis. Travel time can often be eliminated by video hearings and conferences. The educational possibilities are endless. Judge Hawes used the video feed from a jury trial in district court to provide a valuable learning experience for Pinedale students watching the trial in the circuit courtroom. 10 district judges and 3 Supreme Court justices employed the technology or similar technology to provide a several-hour judicial orientation for Judge Quirrell. All were able to participate from their separate courthouses. The savings do not only impact the judicial branch. Judge Prokos provided this snapshot of technology in action in a recent email to me. It says, Chief Justice Burke, given the state's budget situation, I wanted to pass on a vignette on using technology to save everyone money and time. Today, this court saw a defendant who completes a jail sentence in Johnson County tomorrow. Judge Cundiff notified me of this yesterday and advised Sweetwater County had an active warrant for failure to pay on the individual. Rather than have county detention staff spend time and money transporting the defendant, I saw him by video and entered orders. Ideally, he will now pay his obligations and we can close his files. Buffalo to our jail is a 5-hour, 343-mile drive one way. We should have similar technology in all courtrooms throughout the state. We still have a ways to go. The $300,000 of our exception request will not satisfy the need, but is a big step in the right direction, and we believe it is a good investment. Several of our other budget exceptions also relate to ongoing technology efforts. E-filing in district courts continues to inch closer. It has not come as quickly as we would have liked or expected. Progress that has occurred was in no small measure expedited by the efforts of our court technology staff. Our district judges have been able to remotely access court files throughout the state for quite some time, and we refer to this process as case management, and is the first of 3 major aspects of court automation. There is no question that it is a valuable tool and allows our judges to more effectively manage their dockets. We are now embarking on implementation of the next 2 facets, calendaring and e-filing. This is also a significant undertaking, and we are under no illusions about the difficulty. However, we remain convinced that it is a worthwhile investment that will pay huge dividends in terms of efficiency and quality of service for the bench, the bar, and our citizens. Equal Justice Wyoming continues to flourish. Low-income individuals are receiving more legal help than ever before. There are more legal service attorneys. More attorneys are providing pro bono services. More resources are available for those who are forced to represent themselves. Community partnerships to address unmet legal needs continue to be formed. Innovative approaches continue to be explored. We're seeking an additional $100,000 in spending authority for Equal Justice, Wyoming, as one of our budget exceptions. The funds are already collected. We are just seeking authority so that those funds can be put to good use. I will not detail all of their accomplishments because I spoke about them at length last year. The judicial branch commitment to outreach and civic education continues. We believe these efforts pay big educational dividends and engender public trust and confidence in our system of justice. The You Be the Judge programs have been held in nearly every judicial district. The programs have been held in schools, community colleges, libraries, and courtrooms. The judges and lawyers in Sweetwater County will be finishing up the second week of their program this week. This is the second time they've done that program. We are also pleased to report that we've obtained matching funds for the full $280,000 authorized by the legislature for the Judicial Learning Center. The initial phase of construction has been completed, and we are now in the exhibit construction stage. If you have time, we would encourage you to stop by for a visit. We are very excited about the potential for this project. Unfortunately, the bid we ultimately received for the exhibit package exceeded original estimates. We are currently seeking other bids and expect to make some lemonade out of the situation by making the exhibit information more exportable to schools throughout the state. We believe it will be a better product than originally conceived. As a result, we are seeking a modest general fund budget exception of the matching funds variety to complete the project. This is perhaps a good time for another Pinedale reference. Gerald Mason was an attorney who lived and practiced in Pinedale. He served as president of the Wyoming State Bar in 1995 and 1996. The Bar's Professionalism Award is given in his honor. While he was president, he coined the phrase, "proud to be a Wyoming lawyer." It caught on and is used repeatedly to capture the essence of all that is right and good about the legal profession in this state. The success of Equal Justice Wyoming would not be possible without the help of Wyoming lawyers. When we talk about an increase in pro bono representation for those who cannot afford an attorney, we're talking about lawyers giving of their time and talent to those in need. Today, Wyoming lawyers are making the pro bono commitment in unprecedented numbers. They're also embracing our civic education and outreach efforts. Wyoming lawyers are an essential ingredient in every You Be the Judge program. In the Sweetwater program that is currently ongoing, 20 lawyers are taking part. Our judicial center would not exist without contributions from the Wyoming State Bar. One contribution in particular stands out. The Wyoming State Bar Foundation was created years ago. One of the stated purposes of the foundation was public education projects which promote a knowledge and awareness of the law. The Judicial Learning Center project dovetails perfectly with that purpose. At last year's Wyoming State Bar Convention, the foundation announced its contribution of $176,000 for the project. That contribution allowed us to fully access the matching funds authorized by the legislature. And so, to paraphrase Gerald Mason, we're so proud of our Wyoming lawyers and thank them for their many contributions to our system of justice. Although they are not implicated directly in our budget, there are two issues that will come before you that merit brief comment. Senate File 00030 and a 6 authorizes an additional district judge in the 1st Judicial District serving Laramie County. The request was vetted by the Board of Judicial Policy, who gave their unanimous support. Currently, there are 3 district judges. The weighted caseload study reflects a need for well over 4 judges, and that need has existed for some time. The judges from that district make an even more compelling case. We would urge your support. There's also been discussion regarding funding for DUI and drug courts. I would simply say that according to our judges, the programs work and are viewed as a valuable resource and sentencing option. According to one judge, if there are no drug courts or half the available slots, I will only have 2 options for many of our serious alcohol and substance abuse offenders. Either far less stringent probation or far more individuals going to prisons. Risks and costs of those options are significant. Another district judge echoed those sentiments and added, "In my opinion, it has been a success and has helped individuals break the cycle of addiction." Obviously, the funding decision for those programs rests with you. But if you need more information from our judges about this issue, please know that it is available. And along similar lines, there is a judicial component to many of the problems you are facing. Sentencing, pretrial release, involuntary commitments, elder issues come to mind. We would welcome more opportunities for conversation and collaboration. Soon you will be reviewing our budget request. From our perspective, it is very lean. We have very few exception requests, and I've identified most of them in my previous remarks. Some of those requests do not involve general fund dollars. Our general fund standard budget is approximately $73 million. This includes the Supreme Court, all district courts, and all circuit courts. Total payroll for our branch is $65.5 million, which is 90% of that budget. Although the judicial workload has increased and we have taken on more projects, the number of employee positions in that budget has essentially remained constant over the last several years. We are left with approximately $7.5 million to fund all other general fund standard budget items. IT service agreements eat up a significant portion of those funds. Other items including funding for magistrates, commissioners, court interpreters, and transcript costs. Interpreter and transcript costs are difficult to predict. For example, in a recent trial, we need an interpreter qualified in Mandarin. That was a two-week trial. The interpreter cost there was $12,000. However, interpreter costs and transcript costs implicate due process concerns, and when they're needed, they are essential. There's very little left to fund other office expenses, travel, training, and miscellaneous costs from that budget. We've tried to be effective stewards of taxpayers' dollars, and our current request maintains that commitment. Most of our employees wear several hats. They're the heart of our branch. They do what it takes to accomplish our mission. Most states have judicial education departments. We can't do that because we lack the economies of scale. But our need for educated judges is identical to the needs in those states. So we improvise. The judicial orientation program mentioned earlier is a classic example of our use of resources. We have not added one employee in pursuit of our civic education efforts. I could go on with numerous other examples, but recognize that time is short. Typically, it seems to me, we are asking, what more can we do to make our branch more effective and economical? What can we do to better serve our citizens? That thought process, I believe, permeates our branch of government, and employees at every level are contributing to that effort. Before closing, I would like to mention my colleagues on the Supreme Court bench. It is a pleasure to work with Justices Hill, Davis, Fox, and Couts. They are leaders and team players. When issues are raised or problems discussed, inevitably their response is, what can I do? How can I help? All have traveled to participate throughout the state to participate in the UB the Judge program. I think Justice Fox is scheduled to be in Rock Springs for the program there this week. They've taken on additional responsibilities in court security, court technology, access to justice, judicial education, and many other areas. Much of what gets accomplished in our branch is attributable to their efforts. I've gone on at length about our budget and our employees because I wanted you to have an understanding of our circumstances. But we recognize that there are many other aspects of state government, many other considerations that you must take into account in reaching your decisions. We know that it's a very heavy responsibility, but we have every confidence that you are up to the challenge. We wish you well in this legislative session as you grapple with the important issues facing our state, and thank you again for the opportunity to visit with you this morning. Good luck and Godspeed.
Chief Justice Burke, the members of the legislature jointly and together, thank you for attending this joint session and providing your message to us. Senator Bebout and Representatives Berger and Stubson, will you please escort the governor and his family from the chambers? Senator Landon and Representatives Greer and Pelkey, will you please escort the Chief Justice from the chamber? Well, the script doesn't say so, but we thank you all of the rest of the dignitaries for joining us today, and thank you very much for being here. Mr. Speaker, thank you and the members of the House, the representatives, for being our host this morning, and I particularly enjoyed the electrical conduit and the red box to the left. It's kind of like a rat maze in here. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President, and members of the House and the Senate. It's been a while since I've been in front of the House. This is kind of a nice vintage point right up here, and I've got a few Senate files I'd like to talk to you about, but this is probably not the appropriate time. So, Mr. President, I move that this joint session be dissolved.
Mr. President, I second that motion.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. That motion was carried. Senator Bebout.
Where is she?
Just a second, Kermit. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be in recess until 2 p.m.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it. The Senate is recessed until 2 p.m.
House Majority Leader Berger. Your mic's not on.
Technical difficulties. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House be in recess until 2 p.m.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion is passed. We're in recess until 2 p.m.
No.
Well, Mr. Speaker.
Well, Mr. President.